This week, I was going out with my kids on Sunday, and I took them to the park to give Shira a break. And as I'm there, I decided, okay, I don't want to look, I don't want anyone to come up to me or whatever. So I'm just going to wear a nice cap. I put a cap on, and didn't necessarily look that. I mean, I look Jewish with my kids, whatever. But I didn't want to stick out. But then I'm sitting there with my cap, and all of a sudden there's an Israeli guy. And he could tell that I'm Jewish, so he starts talking to me in Hebrew. And a mistake that I made. I mean, I was talking to my kids a bit in Hebrew, so he realized, you know, Batsheva Ruti, you know. So he like, and then he was going on about how what's going on in Israel, and all the politics in Israel. And he's like, you know, these religious people, they're destroying the country. It's very funny.
Will you sit this out or?
No.
Yeah.
I was wearing a coat and just like pants or whatever. I mean, if you would look a little more, you'd realize I'm not. I probably still have like a, I don't know.
You had your keep on though,
No, I was wearing a cap,
Oh.
a baseball cap. So he was going on, and I'm like, so then I said to him, you know, I don't know if you know, but not all religious people are the same. You know, there are different types. You should come to my house once. And then he said, no, me and you are the type that are suffering right now. And he tried to put me like him. My point is that he kept saying things, and I realized it would take me probably a day of sitting down with a person like this to really change his mind. It wouldn't be an
Only a
hour and
day.
a what?
Only a day, that's pretty
No, probably more. But like, I really do believe if I sat with him and brought him to my home and showed him like my life, and made him realize, make him realize that he's making a mistake, I think he would have changed his mind a little bit, you know, his view. But it was an older man who he told me 3 times a day he reads each time of the day a different newspaper, Israeli newspaper. So we're talking about someone who's really obsessed with the news and politics, very political. And I felt like I'm with my kids. I don't want to get into this, but I was hearing things because he's thinking I'm not a religious like this religious guy. I mean, my wife's from Jerusalem, from Ramat Shlomo, which is like extremely religious neighborhood, black and white neighborhood, and I grew up in that environment also. I really, you know, it was hurting a little bit based on what he was saying. It's like really crazy stuff. They're like Taliban. They're like this. It was just they're gonna turn the whole of Israel into the new Taliban with their laws. And it was really painful. And I know it's not true because I think that if someone has a little bit more exposure to what Judaism really stands for, you'll understand that. So much that the world has comes from the wisdom that Judaism has, like from the Torah. I felt like fighting with him, but I managed to hold myself and keep quiet and just say, oh, yes, and just let him go. And I think that that was the right thing because otherwise it would have taken me many hours to go through with it. Like, you don't have to always win an argument, you know, that's the point. You don't have to win. I used to think that I have to win, especially when I was on campus at university. Everyone's like, yeah, you know, everyone's an idealist at school. But once people work and they have a normal life and they're busy with their own life, they're not an idealist anymore. No one is as charged about things. But this guy definitely was. So actually, that's what I wanted to talk about. It's related to it just I was like something that happened to me this week. I'm like, oh, this is where we're up to in Pirkei Avot. So this is what it says in Pirkei Avot. We're in the fourth chapter, Mishnah 7, the seventh section, and it says like this. I might have to bounce at some point if like the screaming gets loud, whatever. So basically, there's. This Rav, his name was Rabbi Ishmael. He was the son of Rabbi Yossi, and he was a judge himself in courts. And he said like this. He says that as a judge myself, and there were times where he himself avoided judging the well-known stories. One time there was, he had someone that worked for him in his field. Everyone farmed back in those days. So in his field, he had one of his farmers were working for him. And normally his farmer would, at the end of the week, in order to show thanks, would bring him a basket for Shabbat to the owner of his own field, Rabbi Yishmael. This rabbi would bring him a basket full of the best fruits from the field. And it came out that one week he comes early. Normally it's always on Friday. This time, Thursday morning, he's coming running to the rabbi, his farmer, with a basket saying, "Rabbi, this is for you." So he says, "Hey, why are you here earlier than normal? Normally you come to me on Friday. What happened? What's up?" So he says to him, "Because today, later on, I'm in a court case, a monetary dispute, and I'm going to be in that court case, and you're going to be my judge. So I decided to come a little earlier and give you the fruits in the basket early." So the rabbi said, "Well, pasulani, I am forbidden midincha to be your judge from now, because you gave me something, and now I'm in favor of your eyes." It says, "Lo tikach shochad," you can't take bribery. A judge can't take bribery. No one can take bribery. But it says that bribery is something that can blind those that are righteous, even the best of people. It can take away, it can make anyone, you know, mess around. You see that with money specifically. When it comes to money, even the greatest of people, the greatest of intentions will justify things that are not okay, because I'm going to gain money for it. Or it's like, I've got a good mind. My mindset is for a good reason. It's going to be for, you know, and then they end up doing something not good with the money. So that's in Hebrew. It's actually called chanifa. Have you heard of this word before? Lachnif. It's like to befriend someone, even if they're doing something wrong, because you're interested in their money or their friendship. Or that's actually a transgression in the Torah it's what we call in the Talmud, chanifa, which is where you're trying to be friends with someone, even though you know he's doing something wrong, and you could tell him, "Hey, that's not right," but you want his money. Okay, has anyone been through? Everyone must go through a moment where that happens to themselves also. Someone, maybe a boss or someone in work, or who normally you'll be like, "Hey, dude, don't say that," but this time you would. Anyway, so this rabbi, Rabbi Yishmael, was very, very honest, and he wouldn't be in court. There's even stories of one rabbi that was walking to be a judge, walking into his court case, and there was a feather on the back of his jacket. Someone came up to him and said, "Hey, rabbi, you have a feather on your jacket. Let me take it off for you." He said, "Who are you?" He said, "Well, I'm one of the people that are going to be in a case very soon, and I'm in a dispute, and you're going to be my judge." He says, "Well, I can't be your judge because you did something for me. You took off a feather off my jacket." So you see how being in court, it's very, very stringent, that you have to have no bias at all to the person in front of you. This is, by the way, I'm not just talking about dinei mamonot or being a judge in court. In general, it's about us in life also. It's about us judging people or getting away from judging people, which is where this story that happened to me is very similar to what I wanted to tell you. So this is what he said. He said, as a judge himself, the best thing that someone can do is avoid going to court in the first place. So this is what he says. Hachosech atzmo min hadin. And he uses the word choshech. What's choshech in Hebrew?
Darkness.
Darkness. If someone makes himself dark from din, from judging, meaning that if you get to a point where you solve the dispute before they go to court. So two people are having an argument, and it's a monetary dispute. You owe me $100,000, and he says, "No way, I don't." If you're able to avoid the dispute in court itself, that's the best thing possible. So that's what he said. Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, who was a judge himself, said, as a judge, even me myself, hachosech atzmo min adin, if I am able to avoid a judgment, porek mimenu eva vegazel ushvuat shav, I'm going to save myself from three things. Because being a judge is not simple, and I'm going to save myself from these three things. One, hate. Why will I save myself from hate? If I'm able, two people are arguing. One says, you owe me $50,000. The other one says, I don't. I paid you back already. And they're arguing. Why is it good to solve the dispute before they go to court? Right? He says, because one, you're going to solve an argument. Mipnei eva. Someone is going to hate you if you don't solve this dispute. Who's going to hate you?
The other guy.
Right. The person that you say is the one that has to pay, right? Hate is going to happen if there's two people that are 100% sure that they are right. One's wrong and one says, I'm right. By the way, you know this saying that people have where they say everyone has their own truth, right? Everyone has their own truth. There's no such thing as an absolute truth. Well, if that's true, what happens in...
Only the Torah is the absolute truth.
Well, that's where I'm arguing. That's where I come in, right? But if someone says there's no such thing as absolute truth, right? So if there's a dispute in money, what would they say? Oh, your truth is your truth. My truth is mine. You don't owe me the money. And the other guy says, you owe me the money. You've stolen money from me. One person has to be right. There are many cases in life where there may be a dispute and one person is right, one person is wrong. There can't be a truth that goes both ways. There are many times, for instance, there is a God or there isn't. There's one or two. There are many arguments that one is right, one is wrong. It can't be that two truths are the same because they conflict each other. If someone says, you owe me money, the other person says, you don't, one of them has to be right. Does that make sense? Either they don't owe, maybe they owe less, but at the end of the day, one guy saying, you owe me the money, the other guy saying that you don't. These are two truths that I believe in that are conflicting each other. That means that there is an absolute truth in life. Either you do or you don't. You can't just say that truth is always objective, right? Truth is always subjective. It can be objective also. It has to be objective. Because there are times where they conflict each other. Does that make sense? Anyway, so back to this case of courts with Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yossi, a great rabbi. He says that when you avoid going to court and solving the dispute, then you are saving yourself from a lot of hate. Why are you saving yourself from hate? Because the other person that you now don't vote against, right, he's not going to hate you anymore. Okay. You also save yourself from theft, because imagine you don't know the truth of what's going on here. You don't know really what's going on. It says that Adam le'enayim o'eh, a human being, as great as we can be, we only see on the outside. We don't know what's really going on the inside. So when you have a monetary dispute, and two people are arguing, one says you owe me the money, the other one says you don't, you should pay, you shouldn't, right? So you have an argument. One person might be stealing. If I say, pay him, and he doesn't need to pay, there may be a problem of theft, and that's on the judge also, to a certain extent, if he didn't really judge the case properly. So that's why when you solve the dispute, you are solving yourself from theft also, and from people swearing falsely. There are times where you don't know the answer to the case, so we'll say you have to make a shvuah, an oath. There has to be an oath. I'll give you an example. There is something called shvu'ah lemiktzat, if someone moideh lemiktzat, which means that if I say, let's say, you owe me $50,000, and the other person says, no, I don't, I only owe you $25,000. I already paid you $25,000. I only owe you $25,000. So to that, the rabbis say, how are we going to prove that he only has to pay half? We'll make him make an oath. He has to make a promise that I don't owe you. And the promise is very sincere. According to Judaism, when they would make oaths in Jewish court, they'd have to have a Torah in front of them. They'd have to have special tefillah prayers. Making an oath was something which is very scary to do. So if the guy had to make an oath, he would be scared to do it. But if he's embarrassed and he doesn't want to get caught, or he doesn't want to pay because he can't pay, he might make an oath, which is a lie, even though he shouldn't be saying it. So a judge who's able to avoid all of these things is great, because he's saving so many problems. All this makes sense. He's saving the guy hating him. He's saving someone stealing. He's saving someone having to swear, even though it might not be a real oath, right? Swear falsely. He's saving many things. That's what it says. So how does this relate to us, and what does that also mean? And what does that really say when it comes to us? So I was writing here something very, very, very interesting. So there are here. Oh, so there was a case with me. You tell me what you should do, okay? There was a case with me. I was in Oregon. And someone was looking after a friend's dog, and free. His friend went away. He said, "Can you look after my dog?" He said, "No problem." Looks after his dog, and the dog went and ate some rat poison. You know the story? It happened to you as well?
No, I'm thinking of something that happened.
Oh, okay. So the dog went and ate rat poison whilst this guy was away. So he had to go to the vet and save the dog. The dog got really sick. He went to the vet and, you know, $1,000 bills, like a ridiculous bill that they had to pay because the dog was really in danger and they had to look after it, keep it for a few days. He paid $1,000 bill. This was in Oregon. And he says to me, "It's not fair. Why should I pay for it? I was looking after the dog and the dog went crazy. I didn't think he has to go and eat rat poison. I had, you know, outside on the side of the house. It's moldy and wet in Oregon all the time, not just once in a while like here, but all the time. And it causes a lot of rats, and everyone composts there also. So that causes even more rats. And there's a lot of rats there. So, you know, he had on the corner of his house outside a little thing where, you know, poison to stop the rats from coming. So anyway, the dog went and ate it and got really sick. A few days it was. So he said, "Why should I pay for it? I paid in the meantime." But when the guy came back, he said, "Listen, I was looking after your dog. Your dog went crazy. I have a dog, never eats rat poison. And your dog went crazy. You should pay for it." So what do you think? Pay or not pay?
I think they should split it.
I feel like if you're the person watching the dog, you can say, like, or if you're the owner of the dog, maybe you offer, like, the majority, you like
to be a good guy.
Yeah, but like, I pay the majority, it's my dog, you were doing me a favor, you're watching the dog, and maybe you chip in a couple $100 if you can.
Okay.
I think you should at least offer.
Yeah, as a good person?
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Who should offer?
The one
that owns the dog.
The owner or the person watching? No, the one
watching. Oh, the
washing. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, but you agree that the owner should pay?
No, I agree. I think they should split it.
They should split?
But I do think the one watching the dog should take some accountability and at least offer.
Mm. Okay. So you're saying the better person is... Who's the person that's, like, more moral in this case? The one that owns it? Or the one that's paying to, that's looking after it and
is
paying.
The one looking after it's more moral because he was doing the favor.
He was doing the favor looking after it.
Maybe moral is not the right word, but he was the one doing the favor. I guess
it happened to his watch. So let me ask you another question, then you'll decide. We'll go back. Oh, so let me ask you a better question. What happens, Alex, what do you think about this? What happens if he would have paid the guy to look after the dog? Instead of him doing it as a favor, I pay you to look after the dog.
I don't think it matters.
I think it changes. I think it changes.
He volunteers and the other guy should pay.
The first guy volunteers. The other guy is like, "I'm paying you per hour to look after this dog."
I think it changes things.
Okay, then it does change things a little.
Yeah, it's like you should have a little more responsibility.
Of course. I'm paying you.
Yeah.
But that means that when I'm not paying you, there's less of a responsibility, right?
Yeah,
because
no,
now that I'm...
Like, how close you are to the person doing the favor. Like, I think if you're really close with them, you might be like, "Oh, it's not like it's entire fall, mm-hmm. I'll pay for it, or pay for most of it. But if it's like a stranger that you hired off of, like a dog app, you'd be like, F that. Like, you have, you know,
right.
you're paying for
that. The app is responsible.
I think the responsibility is the same, but the accountability is different. Because you're responsible for the dog no matter what. Like, if you're dog sitting, you are responsible for what happens to the dog in your time. But whether or not you're being paid or if it's a favor, that's how accountable you are and how much you care to be present for it.
Okay, what happens if you're looking after the dog and this dog, you're walking with it and it complete, you're walking with it regularly and it just completely loses its mind, goes out of control, runs to someone on the other side of the street, bites them. And now there's a whole bill and a lawsuit.
I think you have zero responsibility.
Why?
Because the guy should have warned you that this is something that could happen. Like, it's not.
Dogs don't learn that in a day.
So here's the rule, and that's what we'll get to. So I don't know, but what I understood is it's not really normal for a dog to eat rat poison. That's what I understood, that it's not normal for a dog to get into the rat poison and try and eat it. Normally, they don't do that. So based on that, it's called a pshia or an oinus, which means it was something which was completely out of your control. It's like by force. It was unexpected. No one expects that when you're walking down the street that a dog will completely go crazy, lose absolute control, and go and bite someone on the other side of the street. So something that's not expected of you, especially when it's for free, when you're working for free, no one expects that of you, then you are not required to pay. Then that's absolutely on the owner's part. Because he didn't pay me to look after the dog, so therefore I'm not required to pay for pshia and onus, which means any kind of situation that happens, damages that happen, which is completely unexpected, not the norm. But if it was, let's say if I'm looking after a lion, so then I shouldn't be walking with it in the street. And I am absolutely responsible for that because we expect a wild animal to be dangerous. And therefore, I am very responsible for that in the first place. Yeah.
Okay, so I actually have a similar situation that happened to my friend.
Okay.
She was actually house-sitting for one of her friends for free, and she parked her car in the garage and it got broken into. Mm. So at that point, who has to pay for the damage?
So whose car was it?
It was my friend's car, and she was house-sitting for her friend's.
Well, the friend's car got broken into. Like
let's say I was house-sitting, and I'm house-sitting for Rabbi Jack. I'm at your house, and I park my car here, and it gets broken into.
So your car
gets your problem.
Yeah.
Got it. Insurance.
That's a very different case, because the person that you're looking after the dog for is not required to look after your car.
Right.
Right? That's a different case because they're not looking.
I wouldn't be there if I wasn't doing.
But it's like me taking my camera to shoot a music video for someone, and away it comes and covers me and my camera, and my camera is dead. It's not the production fault, it's my fault because I have the camera that goes to the
dog. Depends.
Yeah, but you're also getting paid for that. Let's say you were doing a favor and you're like, oh, I'm going to do like
that's
a
free
shoot for one of my friends.
Still, it's my
if the people that hired you,
no,
hired you.
I wouldn't be there if I wouldn't
no,
be
signed to be
there.
You can't control your car getting broken into.
Well, if the person knows that their parking lot is dangerous, then yeah.
No, it's probably normal. It could happen anywhere. It's LA.
But if they do, then it's...
Did they know?
Well, actually, it was Oakland, so...
Oh. Why is that funny? Is that normal?
It's like, yeah.
It's the city's
yeah.
fault.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's worse than here?
Yeah. Oh,
way
yeah.
worse.
Yeah.
They like run up to you in the street and just smash your window, take a backpack out of your car and drive off.
It happens in Beverly Hills, too.
It happens in Oakland, though.
Where's Oakland?
Okay, good.
Like next to San Francisco.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Oh, San Francisco's known, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good question. I don't know the answer. I need to look into it.
The owners were nice enough where they were like, oh, it was our fault, you're watching our place, and they paid for it. But
what did they pay for? Just to fix the windows or whatever? Or like...
Yeah, they didn't take anything. It was just the damages to the car.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
It's nice of them.
That's very nice of them.
Yeah, I don't know if I was
the I need to look into what the Jewish law says. I don't know. I need to think about it.
I think that's really nice. I don't know if that's
the Jewish law. But like, Rabbi, you make a decision.
Yes.
You make a decision to do something and you will get hurt by it because of it.
Yeah.
You made the decision to be there. Yeah, but she's saying you're doing a favor. If not for that guy, I wouldn't have come here.
But you decided to do the favor. No one.
That's kind of how it feels.
I know.
Let's say here. Let's say
I'm almost sure that you won't have to pay.
Okay, for your birthday, I'm gonna throw you an engagement birthday shoot. I'm like, let's go do it at the beach. Your camera, you're taking photos of me to do a favor for me, and the wave comes and takes your camera away.
I went to do something for a favor for someone for a music video, and my camera got soaking wet with salt water. It means that like 5K goes to the garbage.
Yeah.
I was totally calm about it. It was like all, you know, like very worried. I'm like, it's my decision. I came here. I'm shooting. It got covered because I was in this place, you know, and everything.
So you didn't expect them to pay
anything? Not at all. Not at all.
If I hired you,
why?
If I hired you to take pictures at a tide pool and I knew the water was very insane, and I hired you, then I would have to cover your equipment.
No.
Because I
no, but he decides to go in the water with it.
I'm creating a liability for you, so I would know that I'm liable.
But he's agreeing to do it.
But knowing the cost of it. By hiring you,
it's not your responsibility in any way.
If I'm putting you in a situation like that,
I think when you're an independent contractor,
that's why
if
her car gets broken into, it matters.
But you made the decision to put your car there. No one told you to put the car there.
It's not your decision. You have to put your car there.
Why you want to put? Why
you
put your car there?
Right.
And who decide to watch the house?
My friend. But like you're being a person.
No, who decided to watch the house? You.
Yeah, me. Okay.
Okay. So who's fault is the other guy because you decided to put the car there?
Actually,
I just think that you have responsibility for any decision you make. No one can take responsibility on your decision. You're the only person who can take responsibility on your decision.
If they're doing you a favor, I think
it'd be great
then
if someone else can take.
If they're doing you a favor, then if you're doing them a favor, then I think that out of kindness they should pay for you. But if money's involved, I think they have there's a duty involved, and then they should actually pay for it.
Don't get me wrong. Like the opposite, I would want to pay that. The same thing.
So the Talmud talks about. So the Talmud talks about something, which is that... Oh, it's good stuff. The Talmud talks about something which is kind of similar. If you put something in the middle of the street, okay, let's say you have a bag and it's got a laptop in it and you're on campus and you left the bag on the side of the, you know, the area where people are walking and you forgot it there and you went away and then you came back and people stood on your bag and your laptop's completely destroyed. And you saw the person, let's say, stepping on your bag. Can you say to him, hey, what are you doing? Yeah, fix my laptop. You just walked on it. Could you say that?
No. I mean, you could say it.
You're Eitan remembers
the
Talmud.
You probably would say it.
Is it a mistake
you
or
could.
Did the guy do it on purpose?
Regardless, you're...
It's not
wrong. No, he didn't do it on purpose. He didn't. If he did it, no. If he did it on purpose, he would be.
Yeah, on purpose.
He would be. He will be more liable.
Don't you think that the person leaving the bag there should take some accountability?
Also,
yes, because he put it in a place where people are walking. So you can't have the expectation in a place where you put it, a certain expectation that people should be aware all the time of where they're walking. There's a lot of people walking here. The person that's at fault is actually the person that put it in a place where there's a lot of people walking.
Right.
Now, if that guy would trip over it, that's walking on the bag, would trip over and hurt his leg, what would you think?
Blame.
Then the guy that left the bag there is to blame, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that when you leave a car, right, in somebody's driveway, you can't have the expectation that he should have also guarded it. He should have been, you know, it's normal. That's what I think, that it's normal for a car to be sitting in the driveway and the person that's at fault is the thief that came and stole it. You can't make that the expectation or the fault of the owner of that place. You know, so it's a normal way of living. It's a normal way of parking. That's the way that people put their car. So that expectation of the owner to also be... you know, accountable for the fact that someone's coming from outside is beyond his expectation.
Unless
there's things which are normal and there's things which are beyond. Yeah.
Unless the last house sitter's car got broken into,
right?
They're not house sitting anymore, and they had to call someone else.
Right, unless it's like something that happens all the time.
You don't know because they won't tell you.
Maybe
I don't know the case, but if it's a...
But like imagine someone says, hires a photographer, says, hey, come do photography at this reef. The water's really dangerous. The guy says, no, I won't come. He says, tell us three other people. They all say, oh, that's too dangerous. I won't come. Sixth person, they just don't
exactly.
Say, hey, come take photos. Well, then this stuff gets...
But then they're accountable. That's exactly what we're saying. Like, the people that called him are accountable because they should have told him about the dangers of his job. Right, there's a liability in what's the norm of what you're expecting of that person by coming. Is it normal when he comes that, for instance, you said Oakland's a place where there's a lot of theft. Mm-hmm. If that guy's coming from LA and he's not in a place where that normally happens, if that happens every day, then probably no one should park their car there. And they should be.
There's signs literally everywhere.
Even in your own driveway? No, like, where do you put your car?
The parking for buildings, they have, like, signs, like, please don't. Like, they'll take anything.
There's a video.
They'll take, like, don't leave your hydro flask. Don't leave a phone cable. Don't leave anything in sight.
There's videos of people at, like, Target or, like, Walgreens or whatever, and they open the trunks. They leave their car open with the trunk open to show that there's nothing
in there.
Car.
Just don't smash my car.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. But that's like Oakland. That's like a very...
Meanwhile, in some places in New York, you go to Muncie, where there's like a big Hasidic community, you can leave your car keys in the ignition and nothing will happen.
Especially on Shabbos.
On the good side. Especially on Shabbos. All the Toyota SUVs. No one wants those. Full of Cheerios, you know? You may as well open it. You see like... Now, there's some nice cars there too, trust me. But it's a sign of what kind of society we're living in. It's very scary. Anyway, so this is the idea of what Rabbi Shmuel said. He said that if we're able to avoid court in the first place by knowing, that's so much better. By the way, according to Jewish law, if you have a monetary dispute, it's best to not do it outside. That means, based on what we're saying, if you ever have any kind of monetary dispute, it's first best to know what the Torah would say before you go to a non-Jewish court. Always best to find out, what would the Torah say? Ask the rabbi, or even go to a Jewish court and sit in a Jewish court to know, because that way when you know that, wait, this really does make sense, you're more willing to accept the ruling. It's like, Aseh lecha rav, vistalek min hasafek, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot also says, when you have a rabbi, then a person, in any case, when someone has a leader that you can look up to and you really believe in what he's saying, you remove from yourself all kind of svekot, uncertainty. Because that way, the decision's not on you. It's on the person that's... There are many times where people, Yerusha, inheritance, families that got on really, really well, there's people I know, the family was doing really well. The minute that someone passed away, there was a lot of money involved. Mm-hmm. Suddenly a massive dispute, the whole family splits apart. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when the family has the willingness to first see what the Torah says, they go to the rabbi, they solve so many arguments. It's unbelievable. You go, you sit down, you discuss exactly what the Torah says, and then there's no argument. Okay, this is what the Torah says, this is what we do. Hello, how are you? Oh, there's a chair over there. Oh, okay. Oh. Oakland.
If someone breaks in, it's not his fault. It's the rabbi.
So he says, what else did I write here? Okay, so that's basically it. Then he says also that someone who tries to get into the courts too quickly comes the opposite. The judge that wants to judge straight away. And by the way, this is going to translate into our life also. The judge that always comes to the conclusion very quickly. He's like, yeah, come in. Sit down, what's your problem? Here's the case. Okay, you're right, you're wrong. You pay, you don't pay. A judge that's very quick, that's the exact opposite. He's not righteous at all. That's not a good thing at all. And he's called, in Hebrew, Hagas Libo Bahora'ah. Someone who's haughty, who's proud when it comes to being a judge. That is a fool. Why is he a fool? Because he comes to conclusions too quickly. fools come to conclusions too quickly. It says like this is what Mishlei, this is what Proverbs says. If you've seen a person that's wise in his own eyes, if you see people, there's some people that are very wise. They know a lot of information. And in their eyes, they have the answer to everything. That person has less hope than someone who's way more foolish than him. Tikval lekisil mimenu. There's more hope for someone who knows a lot less than him. Someone who's haughty with his knowledge. There's so much more hope for someone who knows less than that person. Why? Because someone who's smart in his eyes is always going to come to conclusions quickly. This yes, that no, that, and he's going to destroy himself. The worst thing that a person can do in his life is to come to quick conclusions, whether it's with people you don't know, people who you're not sure what they meant, you're not sure what they were saying, I can't believe they said that. These quick conclusions, by the way, that's what our culture does in a way. It's like this whole cancel culture business is really coming to conclusions quickly. This food was terrible, this cook was bad, let's post about him on Instagram or whatever. That's in Hebrew, they call it shaming. Shaming. Well, actually, it's English, but whatever. But in Hebrew, they say it's shaming, it's a shaming. And it's true, it really is shaming, you know? I like that word, it works well with the concept of cancel culture. And I think that it's unforgiving. And that's what we're talking about here. Someone who jumps quickly into deciding who's right and who's wrong is causing himself a lot of problems. So he says he's a fool. He's also evil because he's causing money to be taken in the wrong way also. And also gas ruach, a person that does that is proud. He feels like, oh, I'm on the high seat here and these people are below me and I'm going to judge them and come to that conclusion quickly. So it's pride that makes a judge come to quick conclusions. I hope no one here has family that is a judge or something. Feel bad. But that's, by the way, there's nothing wrong with being a judge. By the way, it also says that if you're a judge, God is with you. There's like a lot of good things about being a judge in court, and it's viewed as a very good thing. But when it's done too quickly, or we would know that it's coming from a place of haughtiness, of pride, as opposed to caring in making a solution. Why is this important? And why am I telling you all this? Well, first, because that's what it says in Pirkei Avot, but I think that he's not just talking to judges, he's talking to us as well. We ourselves, we walk down the street, we see people, we're judging all the time. We see people all the time, we don't know what he meant, what she meant, why didn't they talk to me, that person didn't message me. There's a lot of judging all the time. And when we can come to solutions on our own, darken myself from judging. Like that voice in me that's judging, if I can darken it, like choshech, as opposed to having the pride in me, darken that, put choshech into that part of me that wants to judge people all the time, then I know that I'm going to save myself from fighting. I'm going to save myself from stealing, taking things which don't belong to me. Because it all starts in the mind. Why didn't they talk to me? Why didn't they give me? Why didn't they invite me? And then eventually, I start earning the right to taking from that person. And a lot of problems, fighting, enemies, hate, right? Swearing, all of these things come, all because of my judgment in my mind. So they say the greatest enemy is within. And in your mind alone, there's a lot of judgment happening. And if we're able to avoid, make peace with that judgment, give solutions to that judgment, then we'll be happy people. So that's the statement of Rabbi Ishmael. It's just today, I wanted to tell you this. This is phenomenal. Because you know, in Judaism, how many witnesses do you need?
Two.
For a court? Two. Why? Why two and not one? So there is a thing, even in psychology, I wrote this down. In psychology, there's the false memory phenomenon where, listen to this. This is written by Freud and many others. That when someone recalls something that didn't happen, and then over time you start convincing yourself that it really did happen. So you start imagining an image of something that completely was false. You thought maybe, And that thought eventually becomes a reality. So it's like false memory where your memory was something and then you thought, oh, maybe, yeah, I saw it was that person that stole. Yeah, it looks like him. He had a mustache. That's him. And then two more times looking at the person in court, you're absolutely convinced that that was the person that stole. That guy, that's him. And that's why in Judaism, you always need two witnesses, at least. Even if you have a video, it doesn't matter. You need two witnesses in court so that you can fight through the memory. What they would do, they would sit for hours. They would have one person first, and there's a list of questions they would ask him. The Talmud goes through a list of different questions we would ask the person. Where were you at that time? What time was it? Many different, what was the street looking like? What was the area? Many questions that we would ask the person, and then we'll call the other person in the same room. The minute there's one falsehood between the two, there's one difference between the two, the whole thing is, you cannot convict someone like that. You have to make sure that both people say the same thing. And you can't just rely on cameras, especially today. We see it. People can make the most amazing things with a camera, right? With technology now, we can edit things, make it look real in 2 seconds. So just today, actually, there was this guy, listen to this. He had 400 years in prison. Well, he wasn't there for 400 years. He was convicted to, listen, this is the story, just today. Man serving 400-year prison sentence, exonerated after 34 years behind the bars. So what was his story? I'm not going to go through the whole thing. This is his name, Sidney Holmes, now 57. He was there for 34 years. And he was arrested in 1988 for his alleged role as a getaway driver who... He robbed a man and a woman at gunpoint outside a store, authorities said. And a reinvestigation of the case raised reasonable doubts about this guilt, noting his conviction relied heavily on one eyewitness who likely misidentified him due to the scientifically unreliable photo. How crazy is that? How can you give someone 400 years prison sentence with one, because we rely on one witness. You have video footage. You have this, you have that, you have one witness, that's enough. How can we do that? In Judaism, there's no such thing. Because if there's one witness, I love that Abraham's over here. If you have one witness, then that could be fabricated. Maybe he convinced himself that that's really true. And when he's sitting in court, everyone believes, like, that's really true. And it's not enough. That's why you need two to fight it out. Especially when it comes to criminal court. You know, that's a life sentence. So that's why it's so important when it comes to real courts. Porek mimenu evan. Obviously, within Judaism, it's very, very balanced. Everything is extremely balanced within itself. Okay, he continues to say that a person should never judge alone. Again, this based on this statement. In Jewish courts, there's never one judge sitting at the top. How many do we have? Took out my fingers, come on. How many do we have? Three. We have to have three. There's never one judge sitting alone. There's always three judges. And if it's capital punishment, yes, we do. And even though it's very, very hard, then it will have to have many judges. Right? Over 20, and sometimes even to the Sanhedrin, 70. But it would barely ever happen. So he says like this. The reason why we have capital punishment, I've said this many times, is only to show us the severity of the sin, of what was happening. So in order to maintain a good environment, in order to have a society that believes in the sincerity of a sin, right? The problem with places like Oakland is that people know that if they steal, nothing's going to happen to them. But if you know that there's a severity to your actions, that's why it's one of the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. It's one of the laws for non-Jews also to have a court, to have a police system that enforces the court, to have a justice system. That's a law for non-Jews also. Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. Any society that doesn't have that can't function. And that if there's a theft and they get away with it, then they'll keep doing it. That's devastating. right? But we wouldn't have capital punishment for theft, don't worry. But there is capital punishment for murder and for many other things. Now, those things that the capital punishment is there for, we know that it was very hard to happen, but if it did, it was, you should read the Talmuds in Sanhedrin, in Makot, it, almost impossible to enforce. The amount of investigations they will do, the time waiting that they will do, the pushing off, to make sure that they really know that this is really the case. They can never, and it's very hard to find such a case. So that's the story. Just recently, 2021, there was a guy by the name of Anthony Mazza. Maybe his name is Mazza, I don't know. But it's good timing. He was 48 years in prison, and he was wrongly convicted to prison. He's the longest ever in American history. So it says, don't judge alone. A person can never judge alone. Don't say, trust me, I know what I'm talking about. Because they are allowed to say, trust me, you're not in the case. They are the ones that went through the case. They can say, trust me. A judge can never say the words, trust me, I know what I'm talking about. They know what they're talking about. So why is this relevant to us? Again, don't judge a person alone. Try and find out what was the reason why they didn't answer you that week. Maybe do some research first before you judge that person. Your best friend didn't talk to you for a week. Maybe there's a reason for it. You don't know? Don't judge yechidi. Don't judge alone. Find out what was the reason why. Because I'm sure, and you can be sure, that something else happened. Right? So that's what he says. Arti dan yechidi. Because the only person that can judge alone is God. Otherwise, human beings, only minimum amount of judges you need is three. And that is his statement. It says that utshua berov yoetz, right, when there's no discussion, when there's no tachpulot, you pull amet. People can fall when, this is what it says in Mishlei in Proverbs, when there's no strategy, discussion, a whole nation can fall. Like war, there's no strategy, a whole people can fall. Utshua berov yoetz, but salvation can come when there's a lot of advice, a lot of advising. It also says, when someone has a lot of advice, meaning a lot of asking, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? The more advice you get, the more wisdom and understanding you'll have. So it's important as a judge to not just come to your final conclusion so quickly. And that's also to us in life. And that's it. Okay. There's many stories, like teachers, the story of this teacher that found a kid with a watch in it. There was a kid who lost his watch, and then suddenly he realized it's in another kid's bag, and he told him off and got him in trouble, and later on it came out that it wasn't him that took this. He didn't even know about this watch that was in his bag. It was another kid that took it and quickly put it in his bag and hid it there, and then that kid got in trouble. Now, there's stories like that all the time, where the judgment comes too quickly, and then it's given to the wrong person as opposed to who it should really be coming to. So that's the message for today. When it comes to courts, Judaism has a lot of wisdom. And you know, a judge can't judge alone. He has to judge with others. He shouldn't judge too quickly. Always avoid the dispute in the first place. And that applies to us also. That when it, you know, so much of judging goes into in our head all the time. Like all day we're judging. Why didn't this person talk to me? Why didn't this, my parents? Our minds can drive us crazy. So there's two ways of dealing with it. Either just like work on yourself, or smoke weed or something else. Whatever, it's your choice. No, don't do that. Yeah, work on it. Yeah. I spoke to a psychologist. He said to me, there's certain drugs that we have nowadays, and they're like walls in front of us. It's just like putting a wall in front of your face. So they were talking about the effect of weed and some of the stuff that we take for anxiety. It could just be sometimes, like obviously there's a need to work on oneself, and if someone needs conventional medicine, you should take. But there's time where we just block ourselves. We're just emotionless to certain things. And that's also not good. What we need to be able to do is face the reality and and fight it in the right way. Yeah.
So going back to like not making decisions quickly and like the judicial system and all that, I definitely don't know enough about it, but also like what's the fine line between like making sure you do your due diligence, but also like by the time you make a decision, criminals can also like live their lives and like until they finally prosecute them, they could already be dead. So they've already like lived their life without any like repercussions.
So it's a good question. When the Talmud says that when the conviction happens, when we actually do realize that this needs to be done, we don't wait. If it's a death penalty, we'll have to wait till the next day, but that's it.
Not even like death penalty, like someone just going to jail for like 30 years. Like, yeah, you can take the additional, but like it already takes so much time for them to like prosecute people and stuff just with the one judge and the one, however many witnesses and all
right.
that like, so yes, you should never make decisions super quick, but also like, it already takes long enough with the process that they have
right.
today, and they're not.
Look, I don't think that the system is perfect, but we could talk about the system here. I think there's a reason why it's happening much worse now than it did 10 years ago, okay? It's to do with our educational system, the way we educate our children, and the kind of things we expose ourselves to. There's a price to pay when we expose to our children to unlimited internet access and ourselves to unlimited time binging and things like that, then we start seeing a lot of violence, you know? When someone plays, I don't know, what game's popular now? Fortnite for days on end. And let's say, I don't know if that's popular anymore, but let's say Fortnite for days on end, then, you know, shooting a gun isn't that big of a deal after all. Or GTA, what is that? Does that still exist? Right? So then running over a cop is like fun, you know? You hear a little squish. You know, like, you know how it's on GTA? That's how I remember it as a look. But there's partly to do with our educational system, which is why this is also happening. But it's also to do with our leniencies, not necessarily in the court, but after. Like, how we convict. Like, if someone really did something wrong and we know it, then we say, oh, we'll let you free. Or this idea of up to $1,000 you can steal is... Yeah, catch and release. These ideas are definitely very dangerous. They are new and they are causing the damage. And by the way, the reason why people want those, you know, to be kinder and nicer to criminals is because of the story of like people like this who 38 years went to prison for no reason. Well, we should fix that too. That's another problem. You know, but I think there's a reason why the past few years has gone much worse. And it's a mixture between the way we, you know, within the court system we react, and we're not strong enough with when we stand up for something. If it's wrong, we should be strong with it, and also with our educational system. It's very number one is our education. We have to rethink and reroute our educational system. What kind of values are we teaching our kids? Is it just how to make money? Go to school, teacher, make money? No, that's not why we only go to school. School's not just to make money. It's also to educate us in making us better people. So, I don't know, yeah. When my kid comes home and he's like innocently holding a Torah and he's singing Torah, 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 and he's holding it and he's dancing up and I'm smiling, one, because he's holding a Torah and it's beautiful and there's so much beauty in it, but also because of the innocence and the purity, as opposed to coming home and he's like, oh, you know, I don't even want to talk about it. Like the stuff they talk in public schools and the education that they're getting over there and the arguments about this movie and that movie and the stuff they're exposed to, it's like absurd. There's no limit. There's no boundaries. So I think the educational system is very important. But yeah, is there a way to fix it? I think so. I think we should be stronger with our, I don't know. What do you think? Is there a way? I think the best way is fixing yourselves. The better we become, like let's say this neighborhood that we're in right now, it's up and coming, meaning there's a lot of Jews moving in. And we're on the outskirts of the Pico Robertson. And there's a lot of Jews moving in and it's definitely raising the environment. Like when you walk around on Shabbat and there's a lot of you know, kids walking around, suddenly there's Jews walking around. And I think it raises the bar. It raises the environment. It does something. So like Judaism never says we should go around trying to change every system and fight for every single thing that exists and petition all day. I don't think that's our requirement, especially when it's beyond our ability. But what we can do is change ourselves. What's the saying? First they tried, I don't know how it goes, but then eventually I realized the only person I can change is myself. You remember that one? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for staying.